put up in the altar on which you climb up and offer yourself unto God. Now that's the second point. The second point is the fire fell when the offering was made. Look at verse 33. And he put the wood in order. This is Elijah. They had already done everything they could do, and Baal had demonstrated that though he was renowned as the god of fire, he could not answer by fire. And Elijah put the wood in altar, the wood in order, and cut the bullock in pieces. Now please note every part of this. He cut the bull in pieces and laid him on the wood and said, fill 4 barrels with water and pour it on the burnt sacrifice. Now please note that. The burnt sacrifice was the only one of the Levitical sacrifices in which the statement was literally made, you shall offer it all on the altar. All the others were divided and part of them was given to the priest and part of them to the people. But this one, it is specifically set all on the altar. Pour it on the burnt offering, the burnt sacrifice, and on the wood. And you see, the fire did not fall until the offering was made. It was when the burnt offering was raised up and cut in pieces. Sometimes it's so easy when we come to services like this to say, oh, I want to give my life to God. And so we begin to march in that direction, and everything looks so wonderful at that moment. And no sooner do we get outside the doors than we realize that there are provinces in us that we did not surrender. But looking like the great big life dedication, we did not realize that there are parts of us that don't go to that altar easily. And we've got to pick up that burnt offering representing all on the altar, even dividing it into pieces and place them up on that altar ready for the fire to fall. You listen to me. The fire of God never falls on an empty altar. Never. So we have a choice to make. Once we've rebuilt the altar and put the stones in place, if we keep that altar empty, the fire of God's not going to fall. And it's only when everything I am, that's what the burnt sacrifice is to me, all on the altar, climbs up on top of that altar and spreads itself out and says, here I am, Lord. Now let whatever you have come and consume me. It's only then that the fire of God is going to fall. All right, look again. The fire of God fell when the water was poured. When the water was poured. Verse 33, the last part of the verse. Elijah said, fill 4 barrels with water and pour it on the burnt sacrifice and on the wood. And he said, do it again. They said, do it the third time. They did it the third time. The water ran round about the altar, and he filled the trench also with water. What in the world is he trying to say to us? Well, let me just simply substitute a sentence. You know what we would have done? We would have slipped in a can of gasoline somewhere along the way. Because we can't quite fully depend on God. We can't quite do it. Let me read to you another paragraph that came from a current Southern Baptist pastor. And I just submit it to your attention. Listen carefully. Since we have all these promises that God will send His fire, how confident we can be in facing our task of witnessing to God in this world. Surely God will honor His word and make us not ashamed as we set about trying to convince men of His reality. The contrast between the calm behavior of Elijah and the strained, excited, and exaggerated behavior of the priests of Baal should be a warning to us and a lesson. But here's where we fail. Instead of acting and speaking in calm faith, trusting not in our own powers but in God's promise to be with us, we, like the priests of Baal, tend in our desperation to try artificial and dramatic means of impressing the onlookers. We try by clever technique to produce our own fire from heaven and our own emotional effect. In our nervousness, we may try by desperate activity or forced effort of prayer, even to compel or force God to send His fire. But the true fire of God that will convert men does not come in that way. It comes when men who have staked everything on God look up to Him, often quietly and in confident despair and true faith that they will not be ashamed because they wait upon Him. When men become too anxious to produce religious effect, we may be sure that it's because they lack real faith in the living God. Let me ask you this. What would have happened if God hadn't answered by fire? Does that suggest anything about Elijah's position? He gambled his life on God that day. He said, if you don't answer, well, there they are. There's just one of me. If you don't answer, where you think I'm going to be? He gambled his life on God that day. Now, I want to rather facetiously illustrate what this man is saying. I don't think Cliff would mind me telling it. He's here tonight. We were out playing golf the other morning. And he'd probably mind me telling that much of it because we didn't really play much golf. We went out to the golf course. That's what we did. And there was a young man ahead of us, and the man that was operating the thing said, there'll be three of you together. But that man got up on the tee and hit that ball and took off after it like he was shot from a cannon. He didn't give us a chance to catch up. He didn't want to play with anybody. He was in a hurry. And so we spent 8 holes, I believe it was, walking around behind him. He was moving very fast, and he got to the 9th tee, and the threesome, I believe, in front of us had lost a ball or something. They were very slow, and we couldn't hit. We had to wait. And there was this young man on the tee in front of us, and he apologized. He said, fellas, I'm sorry, but something's happened down there, and we can't hit until they're through. He said, would you like to play the 9th hole with me? And we said, yeah. So we introduced ourselves. And we were talking afterwards in the place where we went in to have something to eat. And we were talking afterwards, and I confessed to Cliff. I said, there was a time, and I'll have to confess, there was a tinge of this right there. And I stepped up there and put that golf ball on the tee, and I felt like saying, Lord, you saw how that guy hit the ball. It went 250 yards. That's right, didn't it? Right down the fairway. He boomed that thing like a pro. He may have been, I don't know. But he boomed it high and straight and far way down that fairway across that ditch. And Cliff got up there and he hit the best drive he did all day long right there. And I said, now, Lord, I know you need to show this old boy that if he gets to know we're Christians, that a Christian can play golf. And so this is the way I was reasoning down in my mind and heart. Not deeply, because the Lord's taught me too much, but there was always that hangover from a flesh Christian experience. And I said, so let me hit a good drive so that if we get a chance to talk to him, he'll at least have respect for what we say. And so I stepped up there and I did better than usual, but I did worse than both of them. Got down there and we finally had a chance there, a moment on the green. I gave him a copy of the 4 spiritual laws, and he said yes, he would take it and read it, and he left. He was in a hurry. We went in to talk about it, and I confessed this to Cliff, and Cliff said, yeah, but it was good to hit that good drive, wasn't it? But you know what? When you blow that up into the church 1,000 times, that's the reason we're in the trouble we're in. Bring in the parade. Pass the flesh. Polish it up. Educate it. Do the best you can do. Get a big crowd. So bring in your flashy personality and get a big crowd. That is not the work of God. And I'm not saying that He cannot override that. He's done it many a time. But He won't do it once our ignorance gives in to what God really wants out of His book. And I tell you what, when He begins to form out of us and out of His people what He wants out of us, you don't have to parade anything in. God turns Himself loose in every situation. And it's a wide open, earthy kind of appropriation of what Jesus Christ is into the middle of what we really are in our lives, where we're open and honest and there's no facade, and we're just taking what God offers, and we come presenting our need as our only hope. That's all we have to offer. And when that happens, when we pour the water on all the demonstrations of false fire and make it impossible for anything else to answer but God, that's when the fire is going to fall from heaven. And not until then. We can have our programs. We can have our ingenuity humanly. We can get the best speakers and the best human flesh, and we can import it and polish it up and draw a big crowd. But only when God answers by fire is there ever anything going to be done permanent and divine and lasting. Well, let me hurry on. Our time's nearly up. God answered by fire when the prayer was offered. When the prayer was offered. Have you ever noticed the contrast between the prayers of the prophets of Baal and the prophet Elijah? They cried all day long up to a certain point. They'd cut themselves with knives, as it were, and bled their own blood on that altar.